their name and blood. William Wordsworth, A Guide Through the District of the Lakes in the North of England, 1810. Hefted. Heft, noun. 1. Northern England. A piece of upland pasture to which a farm animal has become hefted. 2. An animal that has become hefted thus. Verb, transitive. Northern England and Scotland. Of a farm animal, especially a flock of sheep, to become accustomed and attached to an area of upland pasture. Adjective, hefted. Describing livestock that has become thus attached. Etymology from the Old Norse heft, meaning tradition. I realised we were different, really different, on a rainy morning in 1987. I was sitting in an assembly in the 1960s-style shoddily-built concrete comprehensive in our local town. I was 13 or so years old, sitting surrounded by a mass of other academic non-achievers, listening to an old battle-weary teacher lecturing us on how we should aim to be more than just farm workers, joiners, brickies, electricians and hairdressers. It felt like a sermon she'd delivered many times before. It was a waste of our time and she knew it. We were firmly set, like our fathers and grandfathers, mothers and grandmothers before us, on being what we were and had always been. Plenty of us were bright enough, but we had no intention of displaying it at school. It would have been dangerous. There was an abyss of understanding between that teacher and us. The kids who gave a damn had departed the year before to our local grammar school, leaving the losers to fester away over the next 3 years in a place no one wanted to be. The result was something akin to guerrilla war between largely disillusioned teachers and some of the most bored and aggressive kids imaginable. We played a game as a class where the object was to smash the greatest value of school equipment in one lesson and pass it off as an accident. I was good at that kind of thing. The floor was littered with broken microscopes, biological specimens, crippled stools and torn books. A long-dead frog pickled in formaldehyde lay sprawled on the floor doing breaststroke. The gas taps were burning like an oil rig and a window was cracked. The teacher stared at us with tears streaming down her face, destroyed, as a lab technician tried to restore order. One maths lesson was improved for me by a fist fight between a pupil and the teacher before the lad ran for it down the stairs and across the muddy playing fields, only to be knocked down by the teacher before he escaped into town. We cheered as if it were a great tackle in a game of rugby. From time to time, someone would try, incompetently, to burn the school down. One boy who was bullied killed himself a few years later in his car. It was like being locked in a Ken Loach movie. If some skinny kid had turned up with a Kestrel, no one would have been surprised. On another occasion, I argued with our dumbfounded headmaster that school was really a prison and an infringement of my human rights. He looked at me strangely and said, "But what would you do at home?" As if this was an impossible question to answer. "I'd work on the farm," I answered, equally amazed that he couldn't see how simple this was. He shrugged his shoulders hopelessly, told me to stop being ridiculous and go away. When people got into serious trouble, he sent them home, so I thought about putting a brick through his window, but didn't dare. So, in that assembly in 1987, I was daydreaming through the windows into the rain, wondering what the men on our farm were doing, and what I should have been doing, when I realised the assembly was about the valleys of the Lake District, where my grandfather and father farmed. So I switched on. After a few minutes of listening, I realised this bloody teacher woman thought we were too stupid and unimaginative to do anything with our lives. She was taunting us to rise above ourselves. We were too dumb to want to leave this area with its dirty, dead-end jobs and its narrow-minded provincial ways. There was nothing here for us. We should open our eyes and see it. In her eyes, to want to leave school early and go to work with sheep was to be more or less an idiot. The idea that we, our fathers and mothers, might be proud, hard-working and intelligent people doing something worthwhile or even admirable seemed to be beyond her. For a woman who saw success as being demonstrated through education, ambition, adventure and conspicuous professional achievement, we must have seemed a poor sample. I don't think anyone ever mentioned university in this school.